please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Bill M. from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
Hello, I'm an alcoholic called Bill.
Hey, Bill.
When I woke up today, I opened my mornings with a prayer and asked God what to do with His children today and how I can be helpful. After that, my plans were today was not to go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting this evening. I was just going to relax at home, spend some time with the kids. And I got a call this afternoon. I'd like to thank Dave, wherever he's at, for asking me to come down tonight. I do have a sponsor. I have sobriety date, May 21st, 2007. And I do have the privilege of helping other alcoholics in this fellowship. What it was like for me, I grew up in a functioning alcoholic home. My father was alcoholic, and my mother on the outside liked to keep things together. We went to church. We did a lot of stuff with the family. And and at an early age, I mean, in hindsight from where I'm at today, I can see that my alcoholism took off before I took my first drink. And I can relate it to going into stores and wanting something that I couldn't have, but I was going to steal it. And that was one of the things that I came across when I sat down with another alcoholic and he started showing me some stuff out of this, the big book we have. And because for so long I thought alcohol was my problem. If I take alcohol out of the equation and any other substance that I was using, I was going to be okay. And when I came down to that and I removed that stuff from myself, I just got more crazier and wasn't able to sit with myself. So at an early age, I was stealing to get out of myself because pretty much it comes down to it was anything and everything to get me out of self I was willing to do because I wasn't comfortable with who I was and the way I felt. Having an emptiness inside of me that's like telling me that I'm the worst kid in school, like no one wants to be my friend, like all this stuff, this negative stuff that I keep hearing in my head constantly, and which probably none of it was ever true. It was just my perception and the way I felt and the way I thought. I have to say I grew up in a loving home. Like my parents showed me love the way they knew what to do to show me love. At the time, around 10 or 11, when I started doing these other things, I would tell you that I wasn't living in a loving home. I'd say my parents didn't love me. I'd say all these bad things about them because I wanted to fit in with somebody else or somebody that would negative behavior. My first drink was around 12, and it made me feel whole inside of that, not that the drink relieved me of everything, but I kind of found a group of people that I fit in with that I could do something else with that wasn't the norm, and made me feel a little bit better about myself. Because around the age 12, I was burned in a fire, and that emptiness inside of me, and all the stuff that I felt negative about myself magnified itself because now I feel really different because if I look at my leg, I'm different because now I got third-degree burns, and that's even more of a reason to put something else into me to make me feel better. So at that time, I'd start using alcohol and some other substances, and I'd go on to see some counselors, and they told me it was depression, and then they gave me all this medication to go along with it, and And it sounded all good because I was looking for something to get out of myself to feel better. I'm sure I'll try this. It's nothing really was dramatic at that point yet. A couple years go by of doing the same thing, and my family would, life was still going the same. My dad had, when I was 12, he had gone away to rehab, and I remember sitting in rehab, like, at this function on the weekend, and we'd go up and visit him, and we'd be sitting in this auditorium at Chit Chat, and we'd hear the speaker, and I'd be sitting in their audience, and at the age 12, I was like, I really want to be like those people, because they're saying a lot of cool things. They're like having crazy parties and drinking lots of alcohol, hiding bottles of alcohol under the couch, and like, I heard all this crazy stuff they were doing, but I heard nothing of what the outcome was. My attention span at 12 wasn't ready to hear, like, oh, this is what it causes, and this is what happens to life when it gets a little further. So, in the interim, things of drinking mostly every weekend, and run-ins with the law on occasion, doing things that I thought a 15-year-old kid would want to do, is doing mischief and going out and vandalizing stuff when it was mischief night, and that was something fun to do. And that landed me in with another group of people that I could more so relate with, because they were either in alcoholic families or and interested in the lifestyle that I wanted to live. I wanted to drink and use other substances. And when I was on this probation camp, my first part of manipulation that I could really relate to is that these drug tests that they wanted to give us. If I used certain things and not other things, I'd be able to pass these tests. Because the alcoholic I am, I want to still be able to get out of myself, because I still don't feel comfortable with myself. No matter what I'm doing, what counselor I'm going to, what medication I'm taking, no matter what, I have always, my mind up until this point still thinks that if I do something different, I'm going to feel better. Like, I have to do something different. So I'm away at going in and out of probation, having to pass these tests, and learning all these good ways to manipulate everything. And I was on probation, I don't know, up until I was 18 years old. And it was probably supposed to be like 6 months, and I turned it into that long, from like the age of 13 till 18. And it just happened to be that I turned 18, and they said, okay, we're done with you. You're turning an adult. Like, we don't supervise you no longer. And I was like, oh, okay, that's great. And thought it was like I could do whatever I wanted then, because I didn't have this other person telling me to dictate my life. But in the interim of things, right before I was getting off probation, I decided to use some other substances with alcohol, some hallucinogenics, and I thought that was my problem. If I just don't use hallucinogenics and I just stay drinking, everything will be okay. And so I went to rehab to get cured from whatever it was that I was smoking at the time, that I'm going to be okay if I'm not doing it. And I go to rehab, and I thought they're going to have this magical thing to tell me, like, okay, you can go home and drink again. And they suggested I go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and my dad had been sober for a few years by that, at that point, and so I'd tag along to some meetings with them, and he'd kind of point me in a direction and say, hey, go talk to this guy, and whatnot, and I wasn't really interested. I was just doing it to make it look good on the outside. I wanted everybody on the outside to look and say, like, Bill's doing good, and he's doing all right, and really, I was dying on the inside. I didn't want to live life, really. I mean, too much of a coward to actually take my life, but I'll put as much as I can of anything else into my system to maybe I won't wake up the next day. So at this rehab, I spent 28 days there, and I thought it was like a resort. I went to chit-chat where my dad had gone, and we had gone rock climbing and bowling and lots of fun things for a 17-year-old kid to do and not have to go to school for a month. I was like, this is pretty cool. I can't recall that I said I was going to continue to go back to those places, but that was the interim of what happened. For the next 7-8 years, it was continually getting worse, using daily, and just so I would feel better and not be sick. Many trips to jail. I had one of the things that started my adult career with going into institutions was getting 3 DUIs within a short period of time, I believe within 30 days or so. And I remember going to court and listening to the judge tell me that I have to surrender my license to stay. And I was like, well, this is a pretty good idea. I said, no, I won't get caught drinking and driving no more. I can have my friends drive me around, and I'll be okay. And that was my good thinking, how delusional it was at the time. I mean, I see now that it wasn't right, but at the time it was like what was right. So at that point when I had gotten sentenced on that, I'm just mentioning the time here because it's going to lead up to how much time I wanted to do things my way. I was sentenced to 23 months for probation in 2001. Until January of 2006, I decided to do things my way and turn 23 months into several years. I don't suggest that's a path that anybody should choose. And along the way, I was showed many of things of what to do. I went to rehabs, and another manipulation thing with my probation was that, okay, you tell them that I have a drug problem, they're going to say, you don't go to jail, go to rehab. Sound good to me. Anybody that somewhat thinking smarter, I'm thinking I'm going to pick a rehab. Even though I don't want to go there really and listen to what they have to say, I'll just go anyways. So pretty much it didn't get any better. At the end of it all, at that point, my father was ready to pass away, and in my mind, I was like, well, I don't like the way I'm feeling. I got to do more. And I was ODing, ending up in hospitals, getting out like right away, like getting mad because they shot me with Narcan to wake me back up. And like there was a lot of things that were going on that a normal, so to say, person wouldn't experience. And at the time, you couldn't tell me anything that I was an alcoholic or addict. I just knew that I didn't feel good about myself and I needed something to feel better. Because everybody said that, Bill, you might have a problem, you might have a problem. And I was like, no, it's not the problem. The problem is like either I'm not getting the right stuff or, you know, they're giving me bad stuff or I don't have enough. Like, that's probably the biggest problem, I don't have enough. So my dad had passed, and that's where I can say I hit the bottom the worst. And because I didn't care then at that point really what happened at all. I just knew I woke up or maybe didn't wake up and just kept going. It was in June 7th in 2006 that I was met one of God's children, and he was dressed as a uniformed police officer telling me that I burglarized my grandparents' house that I had keys for. And I was like, well, this is interesting. And needless to say, it wasn't burglarized, but by the means of me not supposed to be there at the time while they were away on vacation is what was supposed to be. I wasn't supposed to be there, so technically I was unauthorized trespassing or whatever you want to say. But at the time, that's what God was able to do because my drinking and using other substances, the only way I was stopping at that point was being arrested, put in some type of institution. And my good ideas of going into an institution was to go dry out a little bit when I signed myself into a psychiatric hospital. And they were taking me to this hospital one time, and I'm at a light, and I remember getting out the back of the ambulance in a hospital gown, like thinking this is the greatest idea, and telling the lady at the drive-thru at this restaurant at the McDonald's, saying, oh, well, they let me out like this, and I got to get dropped off at a friend's house. Like, anybody in their right mind, the lady let me into the car. I don't know if she was a good Christian. Whatever she was probably thought she was helping somebody out that had some serious problems. But that was my good thinking. So, like I said, I gotten arrested, and later on had charges were lessened to other stuff. And but that was my first chance at getting sober, because I tried rehabs, and every time I gone into rehab, I was using in the rehab. I was drinking in there. I was doing whatever I could because I didn't want to detox completely in my mind. And that's what's so much about the within the first step is the powerlessness over the physical and the mental. Like today I see is that it's a lot easier to stay stopped than it is to get stopped. Because like I said, like I can get... The only way I'm getting stopped is if you're locking me up. Like, that's the only way. And that's what I keep in my mind. If I pick up today, like, there's no way, like, I can put it down again. But that wasn't my last drink. I had a sponsor in the interim before that, and I started doing some of the step work, and it wasn't really what I was into. I had a resentment with him because he told me if I didn't continue to make amends that I was probably going to drink again. And I was like, nah, this guy don't know what he's talking about. And needless to say, I had the same experience with the next sponsor. He was telling me the same thing. And I came up to almost in about a year sober when I was living in this treatment center up in Allentown. And what led up to that arrest when I was at my grandparents' house, I was in jail. And sitting there, and I have lots of time in there, my sponsor had come to visit me one time, and we talked briefly. It's the 15 minutes, I guess you can have a visit or something. And in our interim conversation, when he gets up to leave, I said, well, what do I need to work on now? And he just tells me, through the receiver, you can work on patience, Bill. Hangs up, stands up, and turns around and walks out the door. I'm like, this guy is real nice, isn't he? I said, I'm like thinking, that's what I'm like, I didn't know what to do. I was like, all I got is like time in here. Like, yeah, I'm going to be able to work on patience. Like, and I was just, had a little bit of resentment at first with him, and then later on, had prayed about it, and that was the answer that I needed to hear. But during that stay, I went to a counselor because I had been finally, that January, I got off the probation, and I went for this evaluation. And like any other time that I go to the evaluation, I tell them the truth and maybe even add some more in there because I need to go to treatment, not jail. So I told them everything that was going on in my life and what I've been doing and how my drinking has gotten. And, the lady came back from the evaluation and tells me you need long term. And in my mind, when I went and sat down with her, the other people in the jail are getting like 2 weeks at like Eagleville and this other like short term things, and I'm going to be able to go do what I'm doing again when I get back out. Because there was another part of my lifestyle that went along with the drinking was as an entrepreneur of a... want to say is a businessman of other solicited chemicals, and having lifestyle that there was like went along with my alcoholism, because if I drank, I was there where I needed to be, and that magnified everything, because now I'm like the center of attention. I'm like the person that you need to call or talk to. Like, just the getting away from that was like another thing in itself. And this is all stuff that goes along with the lifestyle that I was choosing. So when this lady came back, she told me that I have to go to a 3-month treatment program in Allentown. And the first thing that came out of my mouth without even thinking was is that I drink and I use in Allentown. I said, there's no way I can go to Allentown and get sober. I said, it's not going to happen. And she said, well, think about it and I'll come back to you in a couple weeks. And I believe it was, I'm not real good with time when I'm locked up because just everything seems the same. But she had to come back and talk to me, and in the interim of that, I prayed one evening, and I believe that was like the first conscious contact that I had with a higher power, is that I asked for God's guidance on what to do with this rehab, and the answer that I got was that this voice that my dad would always tell me, he said, if wherever you go and you don't change, you're going to be there, so you can go anywhere and do what you want to do. If that's what you want to do. And that's what my dad always told me. And for some reason, I got to say this, was my first conscious contact with my higher power. So my change of events that happened through that time, I went to the treatment program, spent 3 months there. My idea when I got out of there, I was going to go to a recovery house. And they said, no, you need a halfway house. So I was like, all right, well, that's not what I want to do, but I'll go with it because it's keeping me out of jail. And so in the time I got out of there, I went to a 3-quarter house. And in that whole time there, I spent probably that good portion of the first year just going to meetings and just fellowship. Just saying, hi, I'm Bill, I'm an alcoholic, and try to leave the meeting soon and not hang around and want to leave and not really want to be there. But I did stay in some contact with some of the guys that sat down with me and showed me some of the stuff out of the book in the beginning. So while I was there, I sat down and started going through the big book again, and I was asked to read the doctor's opinion. And the biggest thing that sticks out to me is that the restlessness, the irritable discontent, racing thoughts at night, not being able to like grasp one idea at a time, like that's what Dr. Silkworth was describing in the big book in the doctor's opinion. That's the biggest part that stuck out to me in that chapter. Because that was me to a T. Like, you removed me from alcohol, but I was still insane. Like, the problem didn't lie within the alcohol. And so I could see right away, like, in that, I mean, given the fact that I've been to I don't know how many rehabs and can't keep myself out of jail, is like a good reason why I should think that maybe I'm an alcoholic. He asked me two questions to do with step one, and one had to do with he asked me if I'm powerless over alcohol. He asked me do I know when I'm pick up my next drink when I'm going to put it down. And I really couldn't answer that to an honest answer of saying yes, because every time I picked up, I wasn't sure where I was going to end. Maybe it was good, maybe it was bad. And the second part of the question being is my life unmanageable? Well, I'm living in a halfway house and 3-quarter house and all this other stuff going on in my life. If a person that manages their life well isn't ending up in treatment facilities and doing the stuff that I'm doing. So I have to say that I'm not managing my life well. And we went over a brief bit of the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. And for some reason, the history of Alcoholics Anonymous kind of grasped me with the effect of that what stuck out to me was helping another person to get something out of it, to get out of myself. And when I went over that and listened to what my sponsor had been telling me, some reason this time when I listened to it, it all made sense. And I struggled for quite a while with believing in a power greater than myself. And it was laid out real simple to me. It says you don't have to believe this minute that in a power greater than yourself. He's just asking, are you willing? And I was like, well, I don't know. And my concept of it was like this great big God or whatever it is. And I was like, I don't think I can relate to any of this stuff. And he's like, no, it's very simple. Can you believe that there's a power greater than yourself? And he kind of outlined it a way of the principle in life is gravity. Like, if I'm on the top of a building and if I jump off, am I going to hit the ground? If my intentions are that I want to fly, and I'm like, kind of like, feel like I was tricked there with that question because you're like, no, I'm going to hit the ground. Like, this wasn't cool. And, in the third step, I was given a analogy of this corporation Earth being God's employee. And up until that point, there was and I've only thought about this before one time when someone asked me the question when I was sitting in an institution somewhere and a guy asked me, he says, Bill, do you have any idea where you want your life to be or what it's going to be when you get out of here? And I looked at him with the most honest answer and I didn't know what to tell him. And up until this point that I sat down and started to do the third step, I had felt that I had no real purpose or anything to be in life. Like I didn't have any purpose. And by just talking with the third step prayer and kneeling down with my sponsor and reading it, it gave me clear-cut direction of what I was supposed to do in my morning waking up. And that's when I had, in the beginning, that was my first thing that I did every morning. Like, I had to read the third step prayer because Bill didn't know what to do with his life and if he had any control of the direction that he wanted to go. So I had to go to this power that I don't know, that I'm thinking is, yeah, it's greater than me because I know I'm not, I want to think I'm the greatest, but I guess I'm not because I've all my good decisions got me to where I'm at. I did several four steps already. The first one I can't say that I was all that honest on. And the whole thing, the process with this here is that it talks about do we make mortar without sand? Have we skimped on anything in the big book? And I can honestly say today that it's different than when I first did it because I wanted to leave out stuff. And by all meanings, I thought it was okay. I mean, it wasn't anything that needed to be taken care of. But what the whole idea was with the fourth step was making the searching and fearless more inventory of myself was that I need to get rid of anything and everything that's blocking me off from that God or power that's greater than me, something, because whatever that is, I'm hanging on to it. And I'm the alcoholic I am, I'm thinking about it constantly of what I got to do today, tomorrow, or yesterday. And I'm not able to have any contact with that power greater than myself because I'm still thinking about Bill because either this resentment's got me here because now I can't go to here because I'm not happy, I don't want to see this person, or this judicial system did me wrong because I was like at the wrong place, I shouldn't have been there, you know, it wasn't anything that my actions were doing. And I thought it was to be some complicated thing, and my writing it down, I wrote down this list because I was directed out of the big book. When we got to the point, he said, write down a list of people that you dislike or hate, or institutions that you're not happy with. Because I had quite a few of those at the time. And I wrote down the list of names, because that's all I was to do. And when I talked to him the next time, I said, I don't know what else I'm supposed to write down. And he told me, that he said, if you sit there for an hour and you draw a blank, he basically told me that he didn't want to hear nothing else. It was something that I was creating, and it wasn't blocking me off from God at that moment, and we could revisit it later on. And that was like the most calming thing, and made it so much easier for me to just say, okay, well, I'll write down everything and sit there for a period of silence, and if nothing comes to me, I can move on. Because I heard all these like horror stories about, oh, the four steps so bad, it's such a bad thing, and I can't say nothing more than I had a good experience with it. Was I happy with some of the things, the way I perceived things and my perception of it? Probably not, because everything pointed back at me and had to do with myself. Had to do with the way I viewed life. And it was because you did me wrong, but initially it was that I did something wrong to them, and now I'm just carrying it over into them and saying they were the ones doing me wrong in a lot of situations. So after taking that the fifth step with my sponsor, I had gone home and set this book up on the shelf, and I was determined to take this hour, and to this day I can't say I took the full hour, because somewhere along that hour I had an alarm set, because I knew something, I was going to fall asleep, and I fell asleep towards the end. I don't remember exactly how long, but I stayed awake as long as I could, and then I woke up and read the first five proposals. And at that point, I felt I left nothing out. And I did as thoroughly as I could for that time. The next part, step six, is am I willing to have every one of these character defects that we just went over in the fifth step removed? And I was like, yeah, let's get them out of here now. Like, I don't like... If you're telling me they're bad and I want to do something right, I need to get him out of here. Well, I can't tell you that they were all removed. I wish I could. And we read the part that it said that God will only remove the ones that he feels that need to be removed at this time. And you may still suffer with some of them, but they will be helpful to others. And I was like, well... I said, do I get to pick and choose which ones I want to get rid of and which ones I can keep? Because this sounds like a good deal. And he said, Bill, this, it doesn't work that way. He said, God chooses what's going to work for helping his children. So somewhere along the way, I got to, went over to, did a seven-step prayer and got to eight. I had this list already. And I decided I was starting to feel pretty good about myself, and life was going better. And I was just about a year sober in this recovery house. And it was right around May of 2007, I believe the 19th or 20th, somewhere in there. I decided to pick up a drink instead of pick up the phone and take care of some of these amends that I had to take care of. And before I did that, several days before that, my sponsor said, he asked me, he said, pick the easiest one that I can get. I was like, all right, I owe this lady a couple of dollars for something, I can take care of this amend. But the whole time I called this lady, I was like thinking to myself, I'm like, I hope the heck she doesn't pick up the phone, because I really don't want to talk to her. And I called and told him this, and he said, Bill, you're probably going to drink again. And a few days after that is when I drank again. So I have this pattern of that I think things are good and life is good, and really it's just Bill starting to get back in his life and take care of things and not having God direct me. So I spent the next 18 months, because when I came home that night from drinking, I can't say that my last drink was the worst bottom I ever had. It was several drinks, and I came home to the recovery house and told them that I drank, and they said I had to turn myself into prison. And I called my sponsor on that one, because I was like, that don't sound like the right idea. And what I told him what I wanted to do was go to rehab because, you know, rehab is going to save me. I'll call the prison from rehab to tell them, you know, I'm in a facility and things are going to be okay because I'm in this institution and I don't need to go back to jail. He didn't agree with me. He said, Bill, if you want to keep running from things and you don't want to face what's going on, and you're going to get the same results as you did all the time. And so that day I'd gone down to the Bucks County Prison and told him I had to turn myself in. And don't get me wrong, I felt like leaving because when I got to the front counter, they told me, we don't know that you're on escape status. Sit over there and by the door and let me check your name in the computer. About 15 minutes, 20 minutes, somewhere in there go by, and they finally say, oh yeah, we found your name here, we can bring you in. So I had all that time to think of, like, ready to go. I wanted to go. I spent the next, like, 18 months in there doing a lot of things that I was showed from the first part of my steps when I'd gone through them. Since then, I've been sat down with a sponsor, and I still do 10 and 11. That's a big part of my daily thing. My prayer and meditation on that, some days I want to skip it, and then things get bad. And in Bill's mind, he's like, oh, I got to do more of this. And, you know, I've been kind of like pushing that to the side. I'm not cured of this at all, and I get sometimes wrapped up that I'm not doing this thing perfectly and I'm not doing this the way other people are doing it, and why am I not getting it this way, and it's just not my time to get it that way. Because we have our own, what I've been told and what I'm starting to experience is that we all have our own path. Like, if we'd all be walking the same path, we'd all have a boring life. So any of the guys that I have the gift to carry the message to another guy or woman, I can tell them that hopefully their journey is better than mine, because that's all I can offer. I can offer you my experience, but hopefully your experience is better than mine. Through the past couple years, like, the most freeing thing is when I get stuck in myself is sitting down with another alcoholic. It's saved me on so many occasions. One incident, probably a little over 2 years ago, I called my sponsor that I had at one point and asked him, is a God a punishing God? And in my mind, I thought he was. I was sitting at home, and I get a call from Child Services saying that I'm abusing my child. And so I'm like, wow, this is pretty messed up. I like did all this stuff here that I need to do for this portion of my life, and now God's punishing me. And that's the way I looked at it. I was like, God's punishing me, because that's the way I grew up for a good point. And go back into the step 10 and 11. It says, when we're in 11, it says, now we begin to get a better experience with God. And at that point, I was like thinking to myself, well, now I'm like having a bad experience with him. Like, this ain't good. Like, what did I do wrong to do this? And I had to pray about it a lot and come to the understanding that I'm dealing with a spiritually sick person, and it's nothing to do with what I've done. And I have to take a look at it and see what, in hindsight, what good has come in my life. And sometimes I can't see that on myself. I have to be told that. But from that point on, of the Child Services getting in my life and out of my life, life has gotten nothing. I mean, I owe so much to Alcoholics Anonymous of the way they showed me a new way of life. I mean, I couldn't be there or accountable for anything in life. Like, and by the simple things of putting my hand out to another alcoholic and introducing myself, like, that was one of my fears on my fearless was like I'm fear of being alone. And he told me, he said, you're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. How are you ever going to be alone? So, I mean, any idea that I have, I did tell my sponsor. He'd tell me something else. Like, everything was all, he had an answer for everything. Didn't like that at all. But that's the type of direction that this alcoholic needs, because I have a lot of ideas, and that's what kept me going out so long. Some of the gifts that Alcoholics Anonymous, like, that I've gotten is like being able to be a father to my kids, to be a son, to be a husband, like all this stuff that I thought was going to happen. And I've had a child one time in December of 2005. Wow. So anyways, but in that relationship there, that was going to get me to stay sober. Like, I was like, I'm having a kid to stay sober and I'm going to change my life, but none of that happened. Like, all I wanted to do was to show up for life and do the right thing, but in my mind, I wasn't able to do it. I had no tools. I had everything run on self, and I got nowhere. And it's the 12th step of getting out of myself is where I'm able to share with another alcoholic what path I've been on and what I've done to get to where I'm at. It changes all the things, because that whole time, like, I'll go back to that, the incident with the child services thing. Like, the whole time, like, I was trying to fix the whole thing. Like, I'm like, all right, what do I do? I got to do something to get out of myself, like, because I'm going insane here. Like, this was really driving me crazy. And the what I thought was the craziest analogy of this Rubik's Cube was that I was told an analogy of a Rubik's Cube, and I'm sitting at home trying to make this Rubik's Cube all fixed because there's colors on all different sides. And I get one side in place, and I'm like, all right, I did this myself, and this is good. But I'm trying to get the second side in place, and I'm messing up that whole first side. So that first side is my life. That's one part of my life. Now I'm starting to mess up that because Bill's got his hands back in his life again. And God reaches over to me and tells me, he says, Bill, you got to go out and help another alcoholic with his Rubik's Cube. So I go out, and I'm trying to find another guy to work with. And in that, this whole analogy was told to me by a guy when I called him, when because I keep a one thing that I was taught to keep a close network of people in the program, because don't come sponsor dependent, because your sponsor is not always going to be there, because at least for me, my job is to do is what was showed to me, is that we're supposed to walk with you until you're able to walk with God hand in hand. And this whole Rubik's Cube thing is that if when I came home, the Rubik's Cube was back. Now the second part of my life was put in place. Not only did I had nothing to do with it, but I'm like, well, this is pretty cool. Like, I can do the third side. I got to get this right now. This is somebody did this for me. I'm going to get this now myself. Now I'm starting to mess with it, and now I'm destroying both parts of my life that are in order. And God reaches over again and says, Bill, you got to go out and help another alcoholic. Or somebody. Help somebody, for God's sakes. Like, don't mess with your life. And that kind of, like, hits home with me so much, is that I have to, like, continue to do the 12th step. I mean, who would have thought? I mean, I had those three DUIs, and I wanted to take all matters into my own hands. And tomorrow, actually, I get to go to the driver vehicle center to see if I'm eligible for a work probationary license. Like, I was, like, never thinking that I'm – and I don't know what it was that I called up and to see if I was eligible for this thing. And actually, I was almost a year ago eligible for this. But I can't say what if and what happened, because that's what I would have used to do. Is what I can look at is that, like, God didn't want me to do that at that time. This is where he's telling me to move forward. And life has been so full with everything, and being here in service to everyone in Alcoholics Anonymous. Thanks, that's all I got.
All right, and now we have somebody that would like to say a couple of words. Eric?
My name's Eric. I'm an alcoholic. And, boy, I'm glad I was able to get back here tonight for this. I got a text this afternoon at about 1 o'clock from Dave asking if I knew who Bill's sponsor was. And I kind of just chuckled because I'd never really talk about it, but a couple of years ago, Bill asked me to sponsor him, and what a gift it has been to walk shoulder to shoulder with somebody who is armed with the facts about himself and knows what this deal is about. And truly is not sponsor dependent. It's kind of a leveling thing to my ego that he actually went through the steps before he asked me, so, you know, I can't take much credit. But the reality is, you know, he's helped me as much as I've helped him over the years. And what a great deal to see his mom here and his grandparents. And, you know, it was a little under a year ago that I was able to say a prayer at his wedding. Coming up on Monday will be a year since my wedding. We got married a couple weeks apart, and just thinking back on all these things and, you know, how life has really blossomed since becoming a part of this group particularly, and really getting into the solution that the program outlines. And I'm really honored to give Bill his five-year coin tonight. You know, I think back when I first met him, when he just got out of jail, and, you know, when I first heard him talking, you know, it was weird because I'm sitting in a meeting and I hear somebody talking and I'm like, oh my God, he's speaking the same language that I'm hearing elsewhere. Where did he get this? You know, and I find out he'd just gotten out of jail, but, you know, he had had some good direction before and just kind of didn't follow through with it. But he came out with a willingness, you know, and a desire to really grasp hold of these principles. And it's an excellent demonstration of what this program can do to change a life. And it's a real honor to have him as a sponsee and also as a friend. So with that, I give him 5 years' points.